Live from NPR News, I'm Korva Coleman. The U.S. and the European Union have agreed to a five-year pause in tariffs in a long-standing battle over subsidies to aircraft makers Boeing and Airbus. Instead, the U.S. and the EU say they'll focus on China's efforts in the aircraft sector. The announcement comes as President Biden met with EU leaders today in Brussels. Biden is now flying to Geneva for a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. China, meanwhile, has hit back at the G7 and NATO for criticizing the country's human rights record. The groups also declared that China presents challenges to the rules-based international order. As NPR's Frank Langfitt reports, Monday's NATO meeting was the first time NATO officials focused on China.
China's mission to the EU accused NATO of slander, telling it to, quote, stop hyping up in any form the so-called China threat, and saying the criticisms were a continuation of a Cold War mentality. NATO also called out China for its coercive policies and use of disinformation. But it's not clear exactly how the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, an institution created to counter the Soviet Union in Europe, can address a continental power so far away. And some NATO allies question the new focus on China pushed by President Biden. As French President Emmanuel Macron recently put it, China isn't part of the Atlantic geography, or perhaps my map is off. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, London.
A fire at a chemical plant north of Chicago is burning for a second day. The massive fire at Chemtool Inc. in Rockton, Illinois, forced people to flee who were within 2 miles of the plant. Max Weil says he felt the first explosion.
Literally, it sounded like somebody was standing next to me in a dumpster and dropped like a 50-pound rock into the dumpster, empty. And it just, I mean, it shook the ground. And it was very scary.
The plant makes industrial oil-based lubricants and grease. One firefighter has a minor injury. Huge black plumes of smoke are still billowing from the plant, and people within 3 miles of it are being told to wear face masks. President Biden's nominee to oversee federal public lands is facing criticism from some Senate Republicans. The criticism stems from Tracy Stone Manning's ties to a criminal case more than 3 decades ago. The Mountain West News Bureau's Nate Hedgie reports.
Stone Manning was a college student when she sent an anonymous letter to the U.S. Forest Service. It was written by an acquaintance who warned he'd put hundreds of metal spikes into trees slated to be logged. So-called tree spiking can seriously injure loggers. In 1993, she testified against that acquaintance in federal court. 20 years later, she told lawmakers in her home state of Montana that she'd mailed the letter because she didn't want anyone to get hurt.
The person who gave me that letter was frankly frightening.
Wyoming Republican Senator John Barrasso argues that she collaborated with, quote, eco-terrorists. But Montana Republicans have praised Stone Manning as a bipartisan dealmaker. For NPR News, I'm Nate Hedgie in Missoula, Montana.
You're listening to NPR News.
And this is WJCT News 89.9 in Jacksonville. Good morning, I'm Michelle Corum. The Orange Crush Music Festival was billed as a Jacksonville Beaches event, but mayors in Atlantic, Neptune, and Jacksonville Beach say their cities have not issued any event permits for the music festival. Still, WJCT News' Sydney Bowles reports law enforcement officials at the beaches are preparing for some big crowds.
Orange Crush's website shows events planned for clubs and parks in Jacksonville, not at the beaches. But Atlantic, Neptune, and Jacks Beach are still preparing for a busy weekend, with as many as 15,000 partiers expected to flock to the area. Orange Crush attracts a predominantly black college-age crowd and has historically taken place on Georgia's Tybee Island near Savannah. Event organizers say they left Tybee because of insufficient parking and other resources, as well as unspecified civil rights violations. Local news also reported dozens of arrests, including gun and drug violations, at the festival in 2018. Orange Crush kicks off this Friday with events at Justice Pub downtown and Mascara's Gentleman's Club on the south side. Sydney Bowles, WJCT News, 89.9.
Sticker shock at the gas pump as the average price of regular unleaded jumps 12 cents in a single week. Regulars going for around $2.94 a gallon in Jacksonville. That makes us one of the 5 metro areas in the state with the cheapest gas. 79 degrees in Jacksonville. A 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms for later this afternoon.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Workday, an enterprise management cloud focused on providing organizations with a system to continuously plan for all what-if scenarios. Workday, finance, HR, and planning system for a changing world.
kids aged 12 and up are getting the COVID jab. Soon, even younger children could move to the front of the line. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, how UF Health here in Jacksonville is leading on a new COVID vaccine trial for children under the age of 2. What are your questions about this? Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, protecting seniors from scams. There are plenty of them out there. On this World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, we'll tell you what you need to know about that. But first this morning, UF Health Jacksonville is going to soon be giving kids under the age of 2 the Moderna COVID vaccine. The local study is part of Moderna's clinical trials. UF Health Jax is already offering the Pfizer shot to anyone age 12 and up. So how will this pediatric trial work? We're pleased to welcome back to the show Mobeen Rathore, professor, associate chair at the Department of Pediatrics at UF. He's also a chair of the Infection Prevention and Control Committee at Baptist Health. And he is also affiliated with Wolfson Children's Hospital, studying infectious diseases and epidemiology. A great expert on pediatric health and the vaccine. Dr. Rathore, always good to have your insights. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Melissa. Good to be here.
And what are your questions about the trial in Jacksonville for COVID vaccines for children under the age of 2? Do you have a kid that age? What are your questions? Will you vaccinate your child? Call us now, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And weigh in on Facebook, too. So, Dr. Rathore, tell us a little bit about this study and UF Health Jacksonville's involvement.
Well, Melissa, we had the opportunity to participate in a Moderna vaccine trial for children, and we started enrolling the youngest children from 6 months to less than 2 years of age. And we actually have already completed the enrollment in that. The response was so overwhelming. We had people coming from Tampa, Gainesville, from all over Florida who wanted their children to participate in the study. And so with the overwhelming response, we were able to quickly meet the number of children we needed to participate in the study. So the study for that age group has closed. But the good news is we are going to June 29th, we are going to start enrolling for kids 2 years of age and less than 6 years. So I think there would be an opportunity for those children. And hopefully the study that we are doing will open the gate for getting all children immunized.
It's not surprising that you would see this kind of demand. And so tell us how this will work. Like, will it work the same way all the other trials around the vaccine have worked, Dr. Rathore?
Yes. Well, the one difference, the trials that have been done in adults, of course, they look at efficacy. And what these trials are looking at is what's the right dose that kids need. Perhaps kids need smaller doses, and that's part of the thing what we are studying, so that there is less chance of any side effects with higher doses. And so after that, we will also be looking at the body's response to the vaccine. So what basically is done is we will look at the antibody response and compare it to the antibody response in the studies that were done in older children and adults, and to make sure that the body's response is not inferior to that. So as long as the body's response is not inferior, we make a very biologically plausible and medically sound judgment that this vaccine should have the same type of protection that the vaccine showed in older mm-hmm. children and adults.
So as these studies take a little while to get the data and to then get approval, what do you think the timetable will be for parents of very young children that would like to vaccinate their child? Because it's 12 and up right now.
That's correct. I think it's a slow, deliberate process for obvious reasons. We want to make sure we do the studies and research in a manner that we can all be confident that the vaccine is going to work in that age group. So I think it's going to be a little bit slower process than even the previous vaccine, and my hope and my suspicion is that it's going to be approved for the youngest children somewhere at the end of this year or beginning of next year. The 6 to 12 year old may be approved sooner than that, and I'm very hopeful and that it could be, it could happen before school starts, so at least all school-going children would be immunized against coronavirus.
Which is certainly something you would like to see, as you've Absolutely. Told us before, right?
Yeah. I would love, I think it's so important that everybody gets immunized. I think we need to get children immunized so they can go back to school and we can get back to normal lives. I think vaccines are a tremendous asset to our population, to our children. As you know, I've been a strong proponent of vaccines for the past 30 years that I've been here in Jacksonville before that. So I believe in vaccines. Me, my family, and my children have all received all the vaccines they're eligible for, including the coronavirus vaccine.
We're speaking with pediatric infectious disease specialist Dr. Mobeen Rathore. UF Health Jacksonville will soon start a clinical trial of the Moderna vaccine for kids under the age of 2. They've already got the full cohort of enrollment for now, although there may be opportunities for your child later. We'll go to your calls in a moment about this. It's 549-2937. So Dr. Rathore, school's out for the summer. But when the kids go back in the fall, masks will be optional, which, you know, I mean, let's face it, that probably means very few kids are going to be masked. How concerned are you about this?
Yeah, I'm concerned, obviously. I think not just for the children who are going to school, but also for the adults who are not vaccinated. I think we need to be sure that, first and foremost, that everybody who's eligible for vaccine get the vaccine so we can at least protect them. And that would include children 12 and older. Of course, there's those children 6 to 12 years of age who are at least as we sit here today cannot get the vaccine. I'm hoping by August, September, they would be. So I think unless we have a situation that everybody is protected, I think not masking in the school system is going to be a huge challenge. And I think I would say that, you know, if you go by the honor system for people who are immunized who get don't get to wear masks and who are unimmunized, who should wear the mask. That brings its own challenges, including the Florida law that forbids us for checking immunization status, which is also, I think, a little bit challenging in many situations. So I think masking is a good idea, and we should try to continue with the masking. And it has to be for everybody until we know that the you know, like in the state of Vermont, 80% of the people are immunized, right? So they are very close to what we expect would require herd immunity.
That's right. Vermont is leading the nation in its vaccination rates. Another study came out this week showing that states with high vaccination rates are doing better. States with low vaccination rates are doing worse. This is common sense. So as you talk about this study for vaccinating babies and kids under the age of 2, the idea is simply to get herd immunity, to get as many human beings vaccinated as we can, because that is our only way out of this in the end. I know that you're frustrated with the slowing pace of vaccinations here in Florida. What are your thoughts about that right now?
Yeah, I think this not an unexpected challenge, but a little bigger than I think most people thought. I think we have got the people who are really wanting the vaccine already gotten it, and then you know there are some groups of people who will not get the vaccine no matter what. But I think I would really encourage those who are thinking about it, who are on the fence, if you will, that they should talk to their physician and discuss it with them and see if, you know, why it is important to get the vaccine. There are lots of opportunities to getting the vaccine in the community, with your doctor's office, in the hospitals. I think we need to encourage people to get the vaccine, because now over a billion doses of vaccines have been given, and we now know that the vaccine is in general safe and effective. So I think it's one of those things that if you don't get the vaccine, you're not only perhaps hurting yourself, but you're also making it difficult for the community to get back to its normal activities as we did before the pandemic. So, you know, I think if you have concerns, you should certainly discuss that with your physician. But I would say that you need to get the vaccine as soon as possible to protect yourself, your families, your community, and the country.
Let us know your thoughts about vaccinating very young children. 549-2937 as we continue the conversation with Dr. Mobeen Rathore. What about parents that would be afraid that the vaccination could harm their child? What do you say to those folks?
Well, I think being a parent myself, and Melissa, you are a parent, we all worry, mm-hmm. we worry about our kids for everything, right? My kids are much older, and I still worry about them. But I think what we need to think is the risk and harm issues. The risk of getting the vaccine is much less than any harm the vaccine can cause, and the risk of getting the infection is so much higher. And the harm that it causes in everybody, but especially in children, we forget. Yes, children do not often get as serious an infection as adults do, but kids do get the infection. Kids do die of the infection. If kids get the infection, as we saw from the studies in Ohio, that it may affect their body for their hearts or for a long period of time, and they can also get this dreaded MIS-C disease. So I think, yes, kids do not get as sick as adults do, but they do have some major problems, and they chronic COVID is the COVID long, or as we are calling it. I mean, that's another thing that we're going to see in kids. So I think at this point in time, it is much better to get the vaccine than not to get it and protect yourself and protect your children. So I think, mm-hmm. Think of it in those terms. Think of it in terms of that if they get the real infection, it is much worse. If they get the vaccine, they'll protect them from infection. And if there is any rare side effect or harm, it is still much less than what happens when you get the real infection.
What do we know, Dr. Rathore, about long COVID and the potential long-term effects in children? There are children out there, including the child of a dear friend of mine, a coworker here at the station. Her son has been sick for months yeah. and months of illness, and he's 12. And so when people say that kids don't get the disease, they don't die, they don't get sick, that's just not true. They don't get sick as easily or as often as adults, but they do get sick.
Yes, they do. And I think we are learning every day about this COVID long. And, to be very honest with you, it's not something that is very well understood. As of now, we know what are sort of signs and symptoms it causes, but we really don't know, frankly, to how to manage it because it's a new thing. The infection itself, the coronavirus infection is only, if you will, a year, 18 months or so old. And, we are now learning the patients, kids and adults who are, after they get the infection, they recover from the acute infection, they are having problems. And we don't know for how long. We obviously want to make sure not to minimize the fact that what this chronic coronavirus infection would cause. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure they don't have any acute issues. Their heart is okay. The rest of their body function are okay. And then we'll have to manage this for COVID long in the manner that we have managed other chronic infections in the past. But there's a lot to be learned about it. And I think what's important is that if you have an adult or a child who has COVID long, that you seek care from people who have experience in managing similar illnesses. I think everybody does not manage that as in their practices. And I think also you need to make sure you are seeking care from people who are up to date on this information. This is all brand new. And I think what's happening in many parts of the country is there are programs and clinics that are focusing on just this and trying to understand it and to help the families along.
Mm. Let me ask you about this as well. Federal public health experts are looking at a possible link this week between COVID-19 vaccines and a rare heart condition among teens and young adults. They've documented about 200 cases of myocarditis and pericarditis in kids aged 16 to 24 after they received the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. This is a very rare type of heart inflammation, we need to stress. But they are investigating whether the vaccine is the cause, and they're still recommending that everybody age 12 and up get vaccinated. So there have been very rare instances of people having adverse reactions to the vaccine. They're continuing to study it, Dr. Rathore. What about this new information we're learning?
Yeah, I think myocarditis, by the way, also happens with the coronavirus infection. We now have more than 800 cases of myocarditis that are temporarily associated with coronavirus vaccine receipt. Most of these cases are young adults, and I want to stress this next point. We have no evidence of a cause-effect relationship between coronavirus vaccine and myocarditis, okay? That's extremely important to remember. Now, last week, CDC presented some data at the FDA meeting, and they showed that the myocarditis cases temporarily associated with coronavirus vaccine is double or quadruple the background cases of myocarditis that is seen in 16 to 24-year-old individuals. Now, that's the background. That's not the cases you see with coronavirus infection, which is much higher. So myocarditis, as you know, is rare in the general population. However, I believe that doubling or quadrupling of these cases associated with coronavirus vaccine, although still rare, is quite high. And so CDC is investigating that. I think we should have confidence in this, in our systems in place that not only identify these problems, but also take a deeper look into this. And I think we are this Friday, we are going to hear more about it when the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices meet and discuss this further. Now, there are some data that suggests that coronavirus infection itself and the multisystem inflammatory syndrome or MISC in children and adults, it also affects the heart. So my hope is that the CDC will present the comparison of these diseases and myocarditis, the temporal associated, and I hope and pray and wish that this is not related to coronavirus vaccine. But we have to be very sure that we need more science, more data before we make up our mind. And don't forget, you know, we put the vaccine on J&J on pause, and we only had 8 cases of brain vessel clotting, and the vaccine was basically removed. And then we had another vaccine, the first rotavirus vaccine. We had 8 cases of an abdominal problem called interception and infants, and the vaccine was removed for the market. And also, you know, we used to get 8 cases of vaccine-associated poliomyelitis when you used oral polio vaccine, 8 cases per year when you used oral polio vaccine. And we made a decision to remove oral polio vaccine and replace it with inactivated, which is a short polio vaccine. And so I think we have in the past been able to identify problems early, look at them in detail, and decide whether they are related to the vaccine or not, and if related to the vaccine, take appropriate action. At this point in time, we do not have any evidence that this myocarditis is directly cause-effect related to the vaccine. This is extremely important for everybody to understand.
Right. More than 350 million people have gotten the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines. This condition occurred in young men, a few hundred of them, aged 16 to 24, after they received their second dose. The majority made a full recovery. Now, all of that said, these kinds of things get seized on by anti-vaccination activists, and they tend to point to these instances as evidence of why people should not get vaccinated. What are you doing at UF Health and also at Wolfson Children's to combat that movement? Because it is a real movement in this country, and it's making it more difficult for us to get to herd immunity in this pandemic.
Yeah, so we are constantly working to get the information out, the right information out. I think when we say that, you know, we need to know more about myocarditis, we say that because we want the public to have confidence in the health system, in the agencies that look over, provide oversight for these things, and CDC being the main of those. I think our goal is to, first of all, get the message out that these vaccines are safe, they are effective, they are important, and if there is a problem with the vaccine, there is a system in place that will look into that and will assure that if it is related to the vaccine, we will take appropriate action, and if it's not related to the vaccine, we will continue. And even if there are rare side effects that happen, to be able to say how to manage that. So, you know, for myocarditis so far, there have been no deaths. Most people have self-limited, they have done well. But I think it's important for maintaining public's confidence that we be transparent, and we look into that with as fast as we can, as expeditious as we can, and lay the information out there. As I said, if it is related to the vaccine, then we take appropriate action. I don't think it's going to be related to the vaccine. I hope it is not going to be related to the vaccine. But sitting here with you today, I cannot say that for sure. So I'm like everybody else, anxiously awaiting what the CDC reports at the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices meeting on Friday.
This Friday. So with all of that said, let's bring it back to the beginning. The trial at UF Health Jacksonville that we led off with discussing, you filled all of the slots and you said you got interest from parents all over the state, but you also said that there may be an opportunity for other parents with children under the age of 2 to participate later. Can you reiterate all of that again for our listeners?
Yes. So I think the 2 years and the under 2 year cohort is closed, but we'll be opening the 2 to less than 6 year old cohort. And we already, believe it or not, we have lots of people who have reached out to us, and we have put them on a waiting list, and we'll be calling them. On June 29th, we'll be starting the next phase for this age group. And people, if they want to reach out to us, they can send us, I hope you can put this on your website or someplace, email at us, COVIDstudies, one word, COVIDstudies at jax.ufl.edu. They can text us at 904-309-1303 or call at 904-427-2673 and leave a message. And somebody will get back to you. The email is the best way, but you can use any of those. And once we hear from you, we will respond to you, and we will put you on our list, and we will reach out to you when your child's age range cohort opens.
We will try to get that on our website, because that was a lot. That was a mouthful, and I so appreciate you, Dr. Rathor, always getting the information out. Thank you so much, pediatric infectious disease specialist Dr. Mobeen Rathor with us. We'll be in touch soon.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Take care and keep up the good work.
Well, from the young to the old, later in the hour, we'll tell you how you can protect the senior in your life from elder abuse. It's World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. That's coming up, but up next.
It goes back to our beginnings. I mean, we started as a small home furnishing company in the woods of Sweden. Our motto has always been, you know, to provide a better everyday life for the many.
How IKEA is leading on corporate sustainability efforts right here on the First Coast. That's next.
Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
To Electro Lounge Radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today. For the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tune into 89.9 HD3, the WJCT app, or jacksmusic.org. We've got your music on Anthology on 89.9 HD3.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's IKEA store is taking the lead on sustainability efforts in our area. It's our Going Green spotlight this morning. For more, I spoke with their market manager, Chris Nace. Hi, Chris. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
So everybody knows about the IKEA store in Jacksonville. It's been a huge success and a big draw over at the St. Johnstown Center area. But in addition to the product lines, which are so renowned, IKEA has a well-regarded commitment to sustainability. Can you talk a little bit about how that is manifesting at your store in the town center area?
Yes. I mean, for me, I think it goes back to our beginnings. I mean, we started as a small home furnishing company in the woods of Sweden back in the mid-20th century. And I think as we've grown, our company has embraced, and our motto has always been, you know, to provide a better everyday life for the many. And they've always taken it as more than just a retail business, but one with a company that has more of a social responsibility. And I think as we've grown, you know, that's kind of come more into the forefront, and it's something that globally we've been really, really big on. And I think over the years, we've started to, I don't know how to say this, more of a, we've been trying to increase awareness around it more than anything. And I think locally, that's what we're kind of in that phase right now where IKEA's been doing a lot of things for a lot of years, and we're starting to become more vocal about what we're doing and how we're doing it. So, and it's more about promoting a healthy lifestyle and you know, a sustainable lifestyle, more sustainable lifestyle. So here at the store, I mean, we're built to be more sustainable. I mean, we have, I think, 5,400 plus solar panels on our roof that enables us to be more energy neutral and even be able to contribute back to the JEA grid when we finish. We have all LED lighting here, and we have a lot of lights. I mean, it's a big building.
Yeah, it sure is.
Low flow. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's in within the IKEA world, it's actually probably average or even a little lower than average. I mean, we have some enormous buildings out there. So, but you know, for here, this is still a really big. It's almost 300,000 square feet. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we're doing. I think
is recycling, were you going to say? How much you recycle of the waste you generate?
Yes, we actually track our, we call it diversion, and we track what we divert from the landfills. And I think right now we're just about 70% of all the trash that would normally go to landfill, we're able to recycle and divert from the landfill. I think last year it was almost 300 tons that we were able to divert away from a landfill.
Which is so impressive. And so you also use irrigation water from a well. You've made a commitment at IKEA to be climate positive by the year 2030 and to serve 50% plant-based meals in your restaurant in 4 years by 2025. Let's talk about what it means to be climate positive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think for us, it's being able to give back what you take. And when we, you know, obviously when you have a building this size, you use a lot of electricity, you use a lot of utilities. So, you know, what can you do? And when you look at our pipeline, you know, the ships that come over, the trains that deliver our goods, the trucks that deliver our goods, you know, how far out that pipeline does it go? So I think part of the, like, 2030 initiative to be more neutral, you know, energy neutral is, you know, how do we partner with our vendors and our trucking lines, and do they have electric vehicles? Do our home delivery companies have electric vehicles? Like, how can we influence those that we work with to also be more sustainable? So it's quite an ambition, and it's something that we're diving in headfirst with.
Does climate positive mean climate neutral? How do you define that?
I mean, not sure how to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, the positive, if you are neutral, you're being pretty positive. So for me, it's almost like a ledger, like, you know, it's what you use and what are you able to give back.
I mean, does it, if I could rephrase it, does it mean that you will be not generating or offsetting all of the carbon you generate at the store? Is that what it means? Carbon neutral, in other words?
No, I think it's about when you look at electricity, I mean, you use a certain amount at the store. And depending on the store, depending on the size of the store, the location, you could have a lot of solar panels on the roof and you still wouldn't be able to cover what you use. But if you look at the company in total and they buy wind farms or have solar farms or different things, and what are you generating in total versus what do you use in total? I think that's an opportunity where you actually could go from being neutral to positive.
Mm-hmm. And you do, IKEA globally does own wind farms in more than a dozen countries. Here closer to home, earlier this year you purchased more than 10,000 acres of woodland in South Georgia near the Altamaha River Basin to protect it from development. What prompted that purchase?
That's something we've been doing more and more, I think, globally also, is purchasing. Obviously, we do use wood in our products. And, I mean, when you look at the company and when you look at a furnishing company and, you know, you're going to be using wood, I think part of when we're able to purchase something like that in a large tract and you can prevent it from development and you can prevent the trees from being knocked down, and then you can... You know, I think they call it more of a sustainable forestry or responsible forestry, where if you take a cut a tree down, then you plant another tree to replace it. You know, I think it lets us control more of what we're doing and how we impact it. So I think that when we do things like that, that's more of us trying to lead the way in being more environmentally responsible for a home furnishing company.
Now,
in addition to...
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure. And last but not least, you want to get the word out that you have a lot of jobs available for the summer. Tell us about that, too.
Yes, we are hiring. And summer is a busy time of the year. We have back to school. We have a lot of sales going on. And it's generally our busiest time of the year. So we do have a lot of positions open. And I may be biased, but I think this is a wonderful company to work for. Mm-hmm. I've been with us. IKEA 20 plus years now, or right around 20 years. And I mean, if you're looking for full time, and we have full time, we have excellent benefits. And yeah, I just think it's a good place to work. It's a great place to work.
Check it out at IKEA.com. He is Chris Nace, market manager for the IKEA location here in Jacksonville. IKEA named to Time 100's most influential companies list for this year, in large part due to their sustainability commitment. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, elder financial abuse and fraud are estimated to cost older Americans up to $36 billion every year. Today is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and you can drop in on a free online workshop to learn more about these common scams that prey on the elderly and how you can protect yourself. Linda Levin is CEO at ElderSource here in Jacksonville and joins us now. Hey, Linda.
Hey, good morning.
Good to have you. So the National Council on Aging says millions of seniors experience abuse each year, all kinds of abuse, but in particular, these kinds of financial scams, trying to defraud seniors out of their money. This is so common, and even really savvy seniors can get taken in, because aren't these scams getting more sophisticated all the time?
All the time. Very sophisticated. So easy to be fooled and taken in, unfortunately.
What are some of the kinds of scams that are out there that are unfortunately taking money away from seniors?
So there's horrible, awful stories of older adults getting emails from what they think is their grandson or granddaughter who's traveling and got stuck and got robbed and they need money right away. And the grandparents are sending money. They're also getting stuff in their mailbox, the regular mail, that looks like legitimate mail from Social Security or Medicare or the IRS, and they think it's legitimate, and they give away their valuable information that gives people access to their funding.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the, you know, their computer, people calling and saying, you know, I'm your IT server, and we notice you're having a problem, and then they take over your computer. They have access to your information. The terrible, sophisticated, but awful ways of getting to people.
Today is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, so we are trying to get the word out about this. At Elder Source in Jacksonville, you help seniors with these issues all of the time, and they come to you because they just can't believe they've been taken in, right?
Right. You know, they're embarrassed, they're humiliated, they're saddened by the situation. There's such stigma around it that, in fact, it's the numbers you have, that's underreported. You know, 1 in 14 get reported. And so it's a big problem. They do reach out to us. We work with them, and we connect them to resources to advocate on their behalf to try to help them. But really, the best thing we could do is educate. Educate, educate, educate. And that's mm-hmm. what this forum is about.
And well, yeah, in a moment, we'll talk about the forum that anyone can join today. But here, are, right. you have some advice for people, particularly if they get an email or a call or a piece of paper mail in the mailbox. Anything that sounds like one of these scams, what should they do?
They should call and ask somebody. You know, if they have a family member, they're hearing about a grandchild somewhere, call somebody. Does this sound like this is really happening? Can this really be possible? Is that person traveling? Find out. Don't just respond. Don't just react. If they're getting something in the mail from what looks like Social Security or IRS or Medicare, you know, call. Don't call the number that's in the letter. Go find the number online to the legitimate source and call them and say, I got this. Is this from you or is this a scam? Verify it. Call the elder helplines at the area agencies on aging and ask, you know, does this sound legitimate to you? If it's Medicare, we have the SHINE program, and our SHINE counselors can help determine if something is a fraud or legitimate.
Mm. I would think
ask their banker. Sorry.
Yeah. Ask questions, mm-hmm. in other words.
Right.
I would think in the pandemic, too, this has gotten worse because seniors have been particularly isolated.
Right. You know, so being isolated, you know, you're getting phone calls, you're getting emails. It's a way of touching you. And, you know, it's a contact. It's an unfortunate contact. But when you're desperate for contact, you'll take anything sometimes to talk to somebody who sounds really trusting, who sounds like they have your personal information. Who else could possibly know the details? Well, they have access to details, and they use that to make you feel comfortable and at ease and or even anxious and desperate, and take their calls and respond to them.
Exactly. Okay, so there is a virtual workshop that begins right after this show, by the way, that will help people be aware of some of these problems and some of these scams, sophisticated scams that can come into a senior's life on the telephone, via an email, or actually in the mail with mail pieces that look like they're from the government. They look legitimate. So tell us how this this virtual event came together, Linda, and how people can be part of it.
So it is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and area agencies on aging around the country are using this as an opportunity to get information out. We're partnering with 3 other area agencies on aging in Florida, Senior Connection Center, the Area Agency on Aging in Southwest Florida, as well as the Area Agency on Aging in Palm Beach Treasure Coast area. And people can access the event through our website. There's a link to the Zoom event. It's free. We already have 200 people registered. We'd love to see more. And, you know, it'll be valuable information that they'll be getting on the kind of help that they could receive.
People can also look at it later in the day too, right? If they don't catch it live, like most of the Zoom conferences that we've all become so used right. to over the last year. We'll repeat this in a minute. But Linda, you know, while we have you, tell us a little bit more, going beyond Elder Abuse Month, about the work of Elder Source and everything you do in the community.
Oh, thanks, Melissa. So we are the Area Agency on Aging and the Aging and Disability Resource Center for seven counties in Northeast Florida. And we fund home and community-based services that help older adults and caregivers live and age in their community, from home-delivered meals to congregate meals and everything in between, including legal services and health and wellness. We help the SHINE program, which I mentioned, which is Medicare education and counseling. So if anyone has questions on those, on their health benefits. And we also have our helpline, the Aging and Disability Resource Center helpline. So older adults, caregivers, and adults with disabilities looking for services and resources can give us a call, and we will help connect them to those resources.
The last year and a half, I would think you've been working harder than ever. Seniors, you know, my heart is just goes out to them. People that are afraid to leave their homes, people that are that have gotten sick. Seniors have been particularly vulnerable throughout this time. Now that we're sort of coming out of it, do you feel like your client base is feeling a little more hopeful?
I think so. You know, it has been a tough year. It's been very isolating. It's been very hard. And we've done a lot of work with our partners and providers in the community to make sure we were able to continue providing services and in new and creative ways and new services to address that social isolation and keeping them both physically and mentally well and healthy. But yeah, I think they're very hopeful. Senior centers are starting to open up. They're starting to get out. We still want them to be careful. If they can get vaccinated and they haven't yet, we want them to. And if they need help finding a vaccination site or getting to a vaccination site, we can help them with that as well. And, you know, our goal is, like I said, to keep them well and healthy and active and engaged in the community. And I think we're all looking forward to getting back to life as it once was, right?
Absolutely. I think that is, can't be said enough. again, this workshop is today. It's free, and it's a way to learn about how to protect yourself against elder abuse. There is more on your website, myeldersource.org. How else can people Zoom on to this today?
Well, the best way is to go to our website and find the event and register there, and then they'll get the link, and they'll get into the Zoom event through that link. I could read you the link, but if you want.
That's all right.
That's helpful.
Yeah,
it's probably easier to go to the website.
That's right. Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah. Check it out online. Linda Levin, yeah. CEO at Elder Source here in Northeast Florida. Good to talk to you on this World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, Linda. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Melissa.
And in a moment, there is so much going on at the beaches this weekend, including an endurance event inspired by training for the U.S. Special Forces. We'll tell you about that next.
MoveDay, a Suddeth company, is dedicated to providing personalized and dependable local moving services in the Jacksonville area. MoveDay's team of professional movers provides quotes and real-time move tracking technology. More info at MoveDayMover.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community. featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
I'm Robin Young. Harvard-bound high schooler Virta Tedda got a scholarship at graduation, then went back up and returned it.
I would be so very grateful if administration would consider giving the General Excellence Scholarship to someone who's going to the community college.
We'll ask her why next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, Ashley Ford. Her new best-selling memoir is about growing up black and poor with a father in prison. Her mother was a corrections officer. Ford was in her teens when she finally was told that the crime her father was convicted of was rape, which was especially upsetting because she'd recently been raped by a boy from school. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
More than 200 bills across 43 states are looking to restrict voting in some capacity. Federal voting rights legislation is currently DOA here in D.C. For one former president, that's worrying.
This experiment in democracy is not self-executing.
What's next for voter access in America? We'll get into it next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's called Cloverleaf, an endurance event happening this weekend, modeled on training for the Special Forces. Jason McCarthy is CEO of GORUCK, and he told me more. Hey, Jason, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, tell us about Cloverleaf. This sounds really interesting. What's happening?
So this is a GORUCK event. GORUCK is based upon my time in Special Forces. We put on a lot of different events with rucksacks on. So what does that mean? It's kind of like a rucking event, which is just a fitness thing with backpacks in layman's terms. And so we run about 1,000 events a year led by current and former Special Forces guys. And this is a special event to mark the 69th birthday of the United States Army Green Berets. Mm. So it's a cloverleaf event, which from a tactical perspective, what a cloverleaf is, just to give the name inspiration, is if you have an objective or a target, you don't just go straight for it. You want a cloverleaf around it so that you can get better vantage point from an observation standpoint, and then you go and hit the objective. So, you know, it's kind of like if you're out in the woods and you're hunting or whatever, you don't want to walk directly across where a deer or whatever might be. You want to almost walk directly towards it. It's interestingly enough harder to see. Anyway, that's the name inspiration. The actual event is basically a series of hero workouts in honor of those who have either helped with the forming of the Green Berets or who have paid the ultimate sacrifice in their service as a Green Beret. And there'll be six hero workouts and some distance covered after each one. So you're looking at six various events all wrapped up into one event, and we're running out of our headquarters and in Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Very cool. So tell us more about who will be taking part. When I think of the Special Forces, I do think of the Green Berets or maybe the guys who took out Osama bin Laden. Tell us more about the participants in this event and why they are so important to America.
Yeah, that's great. So here's the thing. I mean, we've been running events at GORUCK since 2010. And we say that our mission is building better Americans. There's a lot of people out there right now, and it's become very cool in some circles to kind of talk about how there's this enormous divide between the military and civilian worlds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just divide and conquer and clickbait and all of this stuff, and nobody's solving a thing about any of it. And the truth of the matter is that we need to solve it at the community level, which is the foundational bedrock of what makes America America. And so we have these current and former Special Forces guys that show up, and some of them are participants, some of them are kind of leading the event. And then you have people who want to train hard and want to be a part of a community in the real world, part of something bigger than themselves. And you know, you have to dare greatly. Growth happens at the tip of the spear. It happens on the edges of life. So you've got to push yourself a little bit more. And it's a lot more fun to do with other people around. So we get people that like to train hard, that like to spend their time outside and be active, and that like to find like-minded people.
And not too late to register, right? Do you draw from all over the country?
We do. We've been fortunate. I mean, we've run events multiple times in every state in the country, and in most countries. We ran an event in Sri Lanka once. We've been to so many countries internationally as well, and so, you know, we have kind of a pretty big draw for, especially for our bigger, more important events, if you will, or really big commemorative ones. And this is the only event that we're doing like this one this year. So I would expect to see people from all over the country.
And the website is goruckevents.com with Cloverleaf. They can choose how much challenge they want to take on, how much weight they want to carry, all of that, right?
That's exactly right. So there is a degree of scalability, just like there's a degree of scalability when you work out at home, right? I mean, if you have we believe more people should go outside. You should talk to your friend. You should be more active, right? And you can do that with a rucksack on, and there's all sorts of health and physiological benefits, such as posture, and you're not looking down, and it's kind of correcting your tech neck, or it counters, you know, when you're staring at your keyboard or your screen all day, and you're just outside and it's great, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do it with 20 pounds, you can do it with 40 pounds, you can do it with 60 pounds, whatever. And then there's also a sandbag stuff. So if you start doing, you know, sandbag presses or whatever the case may be, you can do that with a 20-pound sandbag, a 40-pound sandbag, a 60-pound sandbag. Nobody really cares how much weight you have. I mean, if you want to show up and you know, learn a little bit and push yourself a little bit harder, I mean, that's really what it's all about.
And yeah. It's so cool. As I look on your website, rucking is the foundation of special forces training. Just think of it as cardio for people who think running sucks, which I do. So this is just walking with a weighted backpack or a rucksack. Get really fit doing this. And go to goruckevents.com to register for Cloverleaf. And thank you, Jason McCarthy, CEO. This sounds like a cool event, and I'm sure it will be a really challenging one, too. So have fun with it.
Thank you so much, man. We will.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.